Okay, let's get right back to it. Michael Roll, that's R-O-L-L, Ron Pearson, and Dr. Peter Wadhams with me tonight. We're talking about life after death. No, it doesn't end when it ends, folks. That Forest Lawn is not the last stop. The secular case for survival after death. Michael Roll has been pushing this for a long time. He became familiar and an acquaintance of Ron Pearson, who has done the scientific work to put the mathematical formula basics together, which sustain the work, which points in an extraordinarily, well, it's actually, I think it's fun when we finally have something to hold on to, which answers the biggest question of all. It gives you a multiplicity of feelings, sort of runs the gamut of emotions. But we have it now. It's here. It's not a joke. And all I can do for those of you who are skeptics is suggest that you do the research, do the work, as they say, and then make your decision up. Don't make it up now. Listen carefully. We've got programs in the archives. You can go back and listen to Michael Roll or Ron Pearson in the past and take a very careful inventory of the data that they put out there. What we'd like to do is go back to Michael Roll first and talk a little bit about organized religion. The only thing you have in common with organized religion is the fact that both of you concur that there is a soul existence after life on this veil of tears, as many would call it. Other than that, it would seem that life after death, as practiced and beheld by most organized religion, is used as a carrot and stick to keep people in line, to mold and otherwise control their behavior. Michael, how do you see it?
Yes, and what's so exciting about these wonderful discoveries proving survival is that now we're on top of the pile looking back. We can now mark the work of our ancestors. In some cases, they were absolutely right, but in others, they got it desperately wrong. Mm-hmm. Because nothing is supernatural. If something happens, what Sir William Crookes witnessed there, he says, I'm not saying it's possible what I witnessed, I'm just saying it happened. So there's got to be a rational scientific explanation for it.
He was very careful about that. He didn't come out with a big bass drum pounding on it and act some religious convert. No.
That's right. But we can now mark the work of our ancestors because nothing happened yesterday in the laws of physics that doesn't happen today. So what Crookes and Richet and myself have witnessed, people fully materializing and walking about the room, people who once lived on Earth, happened in the past. And, of course, our ancestors thought something supernatural had happened.
Sure.
And they turned these people who they witnessed into angels, devils, gods, or worst of all, Big Daddy God himself.
It's true.
But we now know, Jeff, that people are exactly the same as you and me. And when one of these people materialize, we speak to them like I'm speaking to you now. We don't go down on our knees and start worshiping the people because it's a natural phenomenon. So when people came in fact, I've just been realizing, I've been learning a lot about the Muslim religion since the Twin Towers business, and apparently exactly the same thing happened to Muhammad that happened to me. Somebody from the next world at one of our experiments came up and embraced me, gave me a bear hug, and that apparently happened to Muhammad.
Wow.
So you can understand how he thought something supernatural had happened. And this person obviously was able to talk to him, like the people I've met. They can talk to us as easily as I'm talking to you now.
One ponders how many people throughout our known history who have been written up or in the Inquisition persecuted have had similar experiences, of course.
Well, the
countless numbers of
perfect
them.
Perfect example of that is the Joan of Arc.
Sure.
She thought she was in touch with God, but it's more obvious she was in touch with dead French patriots who told her when and where to strike at the British because they knew their weaknesses.
And
as you know, the CIA and KGB actually tried the same thing during the Cold War because of the Joan of Arc story. They knew it was true. True.
Indeed. Ron Pearson, I want you to, if you can, come on here and give us, and it's not so complex the way you explain it, give us the quick Crookes tour. I didn't say Crookes tour, I said Crookes tour, but we could say Crookes tour, I guess.
Yeah, you could indeed.
Why not? Of this whole idea of a background energy that is everywhere, a background material.
Yes. case I can do that. And I started on this not to look into life after death at all. I didn't even believe it, it happened at that time.
Uh-huh.
I started off by trying to solve two problems in physics, two long-standing problems. One is to do with cosmology, in which to do with the Big Bang Theory, which
yes.
has massive flaws in it. And this is the flaws in it which horrified me. There was a whole mass of flaws in the theory due to Alan Guth in 1980, which produced this Big Bang.
Uh-huh.
And in looking into this, I also had to look at other questions as well, which is also involved, which is another problem called quantum gravitation. There's no theory of quantum gravity, which means trying to match up Einstein's relativity theories with quantum theory. This is being ongoing as well.
Uh-huh.
These two problems I tackled, and I found that the solution would have to involve a background medium containing opposite forms of energy, which I call positive and negative. When I looked into the mechanics of this, a mixture of these two things, I found it had the potential to develop a conscious intelligence. The whole background turned out to be very much like a neural network embedded in a fluid, and it had the potential to evolve a consciousness, which could then deliberately set about creating a universe of matter. By this background has two things. It could evolve in intelligence, and it also spontaneously generated wave action. And what I came out with was that the matter system we are in is built out of waves, which of course fits in beautifully with quantum theory, which is based on a thing called wave-particle duality. Some particles, all particles of matter appear sometimes as particles and sometimes like waves. And this explains this beautifully. It shows that the matter system we live in isn't as real as it looks. It's in fact a deliberately contrived thing. It's very much more like, it's much more like a virtual reality on our computer screens.
And we are the ones who contrive it.
Big one?
We are the ones who contrive it.
Yes, we in fact built the universe of matter for ourselves to utilize.
All right, let me pause right there. What Ron is saying, let me repeat this. He's saying that his work, there's no question about it, has demonstrated there is a background medium, a background energy field, if you will. Some people used to call it the ether. Doesn't matter. It's the opposite energy. There is positive and negative. And this has taken the form throughout the universe of a neural network embedded in a fluid. And it has quite clearly in Ron's work and Michael's and Peter Wadham's is right there with him, has the ability to act with what we could call universal or godlike intelligence and spontaneously generate wave energy. Does that sum it up, Ron?
Yes. Yes, I think so, yes.
Okay, all right. Now, this background medium is everywhere. And I guess the next question I want to ask you real simply is, how would this background medium then substantiate the world of the paranormal? Give us a little bit on that.
Well, the whole thing is that the mind isn't part of the brain, which is the convention in physics. Most physicists and in fact, the whole science, they just accept that consciousness is a function of the brain. It clearly is not so. Consciousness is part of the background medium.
Let me interrupt right there. It's a very important point. I want to go slow with people so they get this. The brain does not own consciousness.
That's what comes out of my work, yes.
Okay. Consciousness, as we know it, transcends the brain, transcends the physical, transcends time as we know it. It is, in fact, a part of this background medium of energy. We are all connected to the universal God. If you want to term it that way, that's fine. You can do it any way you want. But consciousness is part of another medium, not this present time space continuum that we're so hung up on. It's a whole different, it's like the reverse of it. And when we die, it's like stepping out of an old, defunct, broken-down automobile and walking on back. We go right back where we belong. And where we belong is part of that background medium. That's our consciousness, our spirit, our soul, whatever. So that's what the work of Ron Pearson, in a nutshell, in a very small nutshell, brings to the table. And it makes all sorts of sense when you consider that coming from that background medium is the world of what we call the paranormal. We'll be right back and get Dr. Peter Wadham's thoughts on this as we continue with our very interesting conversation about subatomic everlasting life after what we term death. Okay, right back. Dr. Peter Wadham's, that is such an elegant way to look at it all, and it makes perfect sense. A background medium. Medium is a kind of a strange word for the average person exposed to this for the first time, but we could think of it as almost an antithetical energy field to what we live in and experience with our five senses. Could we not, or how would you term it?
Certainly, if we survive death, then it has to be a natural phenomenon. I mean, those. It must mean everybody survives death, and it has to be an adequate theory of the universe that incorporates the consciousness and the human mind in it, has to have the kind of structure that Ron has described. And I mean, it's obviously very early days for such theories, but it's somehow one has to incorporate the fact that survival, if it occurs, must involve means of communication from the dead person that other than those of the normal senses, other than anything that involves the physical body. So this must involve methods such as telepathy, and somehow one has to think of what kind of mechanism, what kind of force or energy must exist that's beyond the ones that we currently understand,
sure,
that allows this kind of communication to occur, that allows the continued existence of a sort of complex set of memories and thoughts, and which we think of as our personality, continuing into a further existence which does not involve a physical body. So that has
and
to be
and
done.
Also, Peter, a prior existence.
Well, yes. I mean, anything, any of these things are possible.
That, uh-huh.
That the idea of a sort of universal energy or medium, which has properties we don't understand, but which may involve intelligent action or is something which is really, in one sense, a religious concept, because this is one way one can think of God. But in a secular concept, it's another force or another energy to add to the four the types of physical force that we know about,
mm-hmm.
that really has to become part of a unified theory of the universe if we are to really understand the role of life in the universe, and at the moment, life as such and consciousness as such are not really incorporated.
No, they're left out.
Theory at all.
They're left out in the cold, as it were, and we can't begin to grasp it all until we take that into account. And that's what we have. What we have so far in physics, as we know it, would you even say is half the puzzle? I wouldn't. I don't even think we're nearly halfway there.
Well, the human factor that does creep in to quantum mechanics, but not in any way an adequate or satisfactory way. It's just the fact that in quantum mechanics, when
when a particle is observed, it defines its fate and not before. And this is something very, very odd. And quantum mechanics is a highly successful theory. In mathematically, its predictions are very exact for describing interactions between atoms. Without it, we wouldn't understand how transistors work, for instance. But at the philosophical level, there's some very big difficulties with it, which scientists have never been able to resolve, concerning the fact that the wave function, which describes how state of energy in atoms, is not defined properly until a measurement is made. And when it's made, it defines a state for that system, which isn't defined beforehand. So the somebody doing a measurement is actually having an impact on a physical on the physics of the system just by virtue of trying to measure something. And this is something where a human person or somebody doing a measurement on a system is actually defining it, which means that in some odd way, the observer, the human being, is entering into the physics of the system.
Exactly.
But not in a way we can understand or really make any sense of. So life, in a sense, the human person is coming into physics, but in a very unsatisfactory way.
It doesn't fit. Peter, this must drive some quantum physicists nuts trying to deal with that.
Well, there's a very big problem which is has been resolved or not resolved by this many worlds idea of quantum mechanics, which is that if, say, a particle that's got no spin decays into two particles that have got opposite spins, they shoot off in opposite directions at distant parts of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
According to quantum mechanics, that neither of their states are defined. You don't know which one has got what spin until you measure the spin of one of them. And the instant you do that, the spin of the other one is defined in the opposite sense. So the information from one particle goes to the other instantaneously, which, of course, doesn't fit in with relativity.
Well, we have to take a break. This almost ties in with the Kazantchev experiments in the former Soviet Union, how disease states were transmitted from one piece of tissue to another through a crystal glass partition with no contact whatever. It was almost as if one sensed it, the other picked it up, and manifested the same disease condition profile without having the virus or the bacteria at all. Interesting, very interesting. Put it mildly. Be right back in just a minute with more. Stay with us. Okay, we're back talking about the most important question of all, perhaps, at least to most people. What happens when we die? And the answer is we go right on. Our soul, our spirit, our consciousness continues as part of that great background universal medium, or energy field, whatever you want to call it. And as Ron has explained on the program in the past, his calculations, his work, his theory has that this background medium actually takes on the characteristics throughout the universe of a living neural network of which we are intrinsically a part of. And just kicked off into the physical form for a short little run through what turns out to be a very ugly scenario in many cases. Okay, back to Ron Pearson. Ron, if you can, give me a minute or two on what magnetics or magnetic fields might do to this. Do we have any relationship to magnetism or magnetics as we know it?
What I find is the most likely explanation here is that electricity and magnetism are both created as deliberately contrived effects.
Brilliantly contrived effects.
Yes, by the mind, which is part of the etheric medium.
Okay.
And it simply designs the laws of physics which we observe. That is, the ones we can actually measure, such as electricity and magnetism, they are deliberately contrived laws of nature but they're really simply mathematically formulated things. It's very similar, in my view, to the way in which we program a virtual reality on a computer screen. We can then decide on our laws of physics we're going to use, and you can make a picture appear on the screen, which looks very real.
So we're doing pretty well then with the laws of physics as we have created them and identified them.
Yes, our minds are part of the background medium.
Yes,
and that's as a part of that medium, in conjunction with other minds, before we split off into little parcels as individual minds, we design the universe of matter, which we then inhabit, and do it deliberately to give ourselves a different form of experience. And when you do this, when you accept this, you find out almost every phenomenon which is called paranormal can be explained by this picture. After all, thunder and lightning were regarded as paranormal in Shakespeare's day.
They were
no longer regarded as paranormal because they're being incorporated within science.
Well, the whole idea of quantum physics, again, giving us this very strange scenario of a piece of matter not really existing, Peter Wadhams, until we observe it, is an extraordinary concept for most people.
Well, yes, the problem was one which led to this idea that seemed bizarre to me anyway, of many worlds, that every time an interaction takes place that defines this state of being of matter, there has to be an alternative. That is, that the observation defines whether a particle, say, has positive or negative spin. But the interpretation that some physicists adopt is that in one universe it's positive, in the other universe it's negative. So at the instant you make the measurement, a new universe is created in which the opposite effect happened. We see one effect because we live in this universe, but a new universe is created which has the opposite effect. But the implications of this would be that billions of new universes are created every second because the interactions are constantly taking place. So where are these universes? It's a very strange and it's concept, and it shows that physics, so long as physics doesn't really take account of consciousness and life in an adequate way, it's forced to go to completely bizarre and outrageous ideas such as that. It's much you need a sort of fresh start where instead of being led to such absurdities, one says, well, let's properly bring the phenomena of life and consciousness into a more complete theory of the universe and see how we can generate a better and more complete understanding that doesn't lead to these absurdities. So I'm very supportive of these ideas about that there is a form of energy or force within
sure.
the universe,
sure.
which is the medium by which consciousness works and life survives.
Peter, let me interrupt here if I can before we go too further down the road on this one. I want to get your view on how this works with Einstein and how he fits in your view of physics as we now comprehend it.
Well, I'm not really an expert on Einstein, but he did feel that quantum mechanics, he said that God does not play dice, and so he felt philosophically dissociated from quantum mechanics because of this random element in it, but he wasn't able to incorporate all of the different physical forces into some sort of unified field theory, despite a lifetime of effort, and present scientists who are trying to do the same, to produce a grand unified theory of everything, are led to some pretty extraordinary paths, so long as they don't include the phenomena that have been discovered by psychical researchers and the phenomenon of
of consciousness in them, and so that you have to go beyond the sort of forces that people at present consider in physics before you can achieve a real, adequate, complete physical theory.
It's true. It's lacking. There are big holes in it, as they say. Not black holes, either. When we come back, I'm going to ask Michael Roll to explain in layman's terms, or should I say layperson's terms, how people like Daniel Hume and materializing mediums might pull in or relate to their connection to the background medium that Ron Pearson has postulated to manifest their particular gifts, as it were. And we'll talk to him and ask more questions in this most unusual area of endeavor, the study of what happens after we die, physically at least. Be right back. Okay, we're back. Michael Roll, Daniel Hume, Flory Cook, other materializing mediums, including the one you were around and worked with and saw these amazing things happen. How do they relate to the background energy field, that other realm of reality, to do what they can do?
Well, that's what Christian Huygens, the Dutch scientist who was a contemporary of Sir Isaac Newton, put forward the theory of the ether, the background medium we're talking about. A tragedy happened when Einstein's theory of relativity came on the scene in 1905 and 1915. They did away with the background medium. In effect, they did away with the spirit world, the etheric world, and the science has gone down the wrong path. So the crunch is, Jeff, we're going to have to repeat those experiments of Crookes. We're going to have to find another medium like the one I worked with, who was far superior to the one Flory Cook, the one Crookes worked with.
Really?
As many as six recently deceased people were walking around the room at our experiment. It had to be good to impress me, because I'm a raging skeptic. This is why a lot of the spiritualists don't like me, because it's got to be really good for me to take any notice of it. And what I'll do now, because since your first broadcast in January, we've been putting the word out across the world, as you know, for another materialization medium to come forward. And I've got some contacts now.
How available are these people? How many might there be on the world right now, on the world scene?
I think
scene?
There's quite a few, but they're too frightened to come forward because they're murdered, you see, and they know it. We're going to have to do everything in secret. So what I'll do, as soon as I find one working with mental mediums, he's doing great work, and of course he'll take part in my experiments, but as soon as I get a really good one in my house here in Bristol, I'll witness it myself. And I'll phone up Dr. Peter Wadhams and get him to, he's not very far away from me, he can come and witness it. Then if it's really good, we can get the big boys in, like Professor Josephson, and we can get the whole thing on film. And that will back up all the mathematics that's coming through now, bringing back the ether. And then there's nothing to stop us. If it's a medium as good as the one I work with, Rita Gould, there'll be nothing to stop us getting somebody like the Princess of Wales appearing at our experiments.
And if
if we're going out all over the world, Jeff, it's got to be internationally famous people.
Well, that'll shake it right then.
Nothing to stop it.
All the apples will fall from that tree.
That's right.
How did Daniel Hume do what he did in relation to what we're talking about tonight? How do these people who have PK powers, for example, or...
Well,
ESP
I don't think Daniel...
Powers.
Let's take that playing the musical instrument playing by itself. As far as I'm concerned, it's somebody in the etheric world, which we can't see, working the accordion.
All right.
It's the same as when I took part in these experiments. We brought musical instruments into the experimental room, and people from the etheric world materialized and played the physical musical instruments. Only we can see them when they materialize, but when Crookes was witnessing Hume's experiment, all he could see was the accordion playing by itself.
Well, what about PK, psychokinesis, psychokinetic energy? Does that have to be somebody from the etheric world manifesting the effects of PK, or can the person have somehow access to that background medium and be able to command that energy to do something on this plane that he or she wishes?
That's, that, Yes, let Ron have a crack at that one. Yeah.
Yes, I think this is one of the proofs of the pudding. The way I look at it is this. In fact, everybody should have a very strong psychokinetic power, because our minds are part of the background medium.
Yes.
And the background medium is being controlled by the mind. So
now where does the filter, the governor, or the barrier come in between our consciousness and go ahead.
That's what I was coming to. As I see it, to make individual minds, there's a huge mind field, so to speak, which extends right throughout the universe. And then to make an individual mind, one has to program, very much like a computer program, a filter barrier for information around to divide into small minds, which are separated.
Okay.
And so then these minds are related to the body we live in through the brain. Now, on this basis, everybody should have very strong psychokinetic powers, because our minds are part of the background medium. So we all ought to be able to produce a very strong psychic effect. We ought to be able to manipulate matter simply by thinking about it. The reason most of us cannot do this, in my view, must be that we are deliberately inhibited. There's an inhibition routine built in, so that we cannot do this. But this inhibition routine must be weaker, or leak in it, in certain cases. And those are individuals then would have quite strong powers. But as I see it, these are a failure of the inhibition routine rather than something extra.
Okay. A failure of the inhibition barrier routine. Filter routine.
A wonky filter barrier.
I got it. All right. A faulty filter barrier. Easy for you to say.
The same thing applies to explaining telepathy. Mm-hmm. This must mean a leak in that filter barrier for information.
Right.
Between two people must have a leak.
Very good. I understand. Very well said. Now, who or what authority invested in all of us this need or this dictum to construct a filter barrier?
Well, the universal mind, which extends throughout the entirety of the universe, must have decided itself that it wanted some other form of experience, which could only happen if minds could interact in a different way, so that ordinary communication, which would be through the neural network of the ether, that would be interrupted by this filter barrier for information.
Okay.
That would make separate minds. Then these minds would be kitted out with a matter system built out of itself. And then you would only be able to communicate from one mind to another via sense organs built from matter. So then the matter system which we live in would seem the only reality. And that seems to me to have deceived our scientists into thinking that matter is all exists. In fact, it's only a tiny fraction of what exists.
I gotcha. I understand. Okay. Michael?
Yep.
Back to you. And the idea of ghosts. Ghosts.
Right.
Just, Hollywood loves ghost stories, ghosts. Ghosts are as much a part of our culture as people are, practically. How do they manifest from the other side, and do they always need a materialization medium?
Oh, no, because a lot of people see people in the etheric world get glimpses of them. There's been millions and millions of sightings of so-called ghosts, but it's only people seeing with an etheric eye sort of thing, having a quick glimpse of somebody in the etheric world. But the beauty of a materialization medium is the people from the next world can actually fully materialize with all five of our senses working, and that's on repeatable experiments. So people have that ability. We've all got this ability to a certain extent, as Ron says. And thankfully, nature hasn't let us down. It allows a certain percentage of the population to be mediums, and they have the ability to communicate with that's our link with the etheric world. And they've always been, right through the whole of history, as you know.
Yes.
It's one long ghost story, isn't it? The history is.
That's one way to phrase it, yeah.
Yeah.
Peter, go ahead. I wanted to ask Peter a quick question here.
Yes, you will ask Peter then.
Peter, what about you and the so-called paranormal? Have you had any, and this is a little tricky question for such an eminent world-renowned scientist like yourself, but have you had what we'd call paranormal experiences in your life?
Well, very little, personally, except occasionally I've had premonitions which have later come to take place. But and sometimes these have been very, seem to me to be very extraordinary, but other than that, I haven't. So I'm really, my own views on the subject are really framed by mainly by reading the scientific literature and looking at the work of the scientists who are working in this field
sure.
and seeing how
sure.
important it is.
We also have an enormous bedrock of anecdotal material to consult too, but that gets into some pretty strange and hazy areas. It's tricky.
But it's the anecdotal material that is of equal importance and maybe greater than what seems like the boring scientific
well,
material.
Well, that's right. That's why I've spent so many years on this program exploring that very, very thing, and now we have you folks coming together and Ron Pearson's work and Michael Roll's decades of effort to give us some real hard mechanical explanations as to how this can happen. I really like the concept of a leaky filter barrier to account for unusual and abnormal talents that some people have and manifest. We've seen them. We've talked to them on this program. And there are many out there who, as Michael Roll says, are afraid of it because they don't want to be put to death. In some cultures, you do something strange and you pay the ultimate price very quickly. All right, we'll pause and come back another hour, and maybe we'll try and take some phone calls if you'd like, see if we can do that. These three gentlemen up in the middle of the night in the United Kingdom to share their expertise, their brilliance with you. And we'll continue in just a few minutes with Michael Roll, Ron Pearson, and Dr. Peter Wadhams.